closer.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm here.
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No,
I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral.
Okay.
It takes three legs to make a tripod or to make a table stand. It takes three wheels to make a vehicle called a tricycle. Every triangle has three corners. Every triangle has three sides. No more, no less. You don't have to guess. When it's three, you can see it's a magic number.
Nine and one, it's a little bit more than six. It's a 51. Tell a story about that in a second. He plays three. There it is. A new career high. 54 for Klay Thompson. Layups. Smart play. All that attention on Klay Thompson. Curry steals the inbound. Warriors are having fun. Klay for three. Good. Klay corner three.
All right, welcome to Sportsholics. This is episode number, pardon me, number 124, the Ricky Henderson / Klay Thompson is the man episode. Let me just let, I love Schoolhouse Rocks, so let's just let this play out. Of course. Anyway, classic song. If you got kids out there and you're not playing that for them, then you're a bad parent, I guess is the easiest way to put that. Like I said, this is kind of, it's the Ricky Henderson / Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, look, on December 5th, 2016, dropped 60 points in three quarters, touched the ball all of 88 seconds. Really, I mean, is this the guy, this is the best player in the NBA? I mean, arguably, you know, look, most of those shots were contested. A lot of them were. So it's just a matter of they got a great, obviously, offense working the ball around. But just, I think the guy could get 100 on the right night. He's just fluid. I had a friend recently that was courtside at the Lakers game, put up a video of him making, it was 17 straight three-pointers in practice, but he had made 10 before he even started filming. And so the guy is just ridiculous. So what I figured is this is probably more appropriate for the Klay Thompson highlight. Five.
Ready? Go.
5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, another Schoolhouse classic. 100, ready. Dude, Schoolhouse Rocks just had it made, right?
5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 60, 65, 70, 75, 80, 85, 90, 95, 100, 105, 105, 110, 115, 120.
You know what I mean? That seems more appropriate. Like, dude, the guy, he gets the ball, he shoots it, and he scores. And by the way, there's, speaking of ball, like, if you don't know these ball, okay, there's these brothers. Lorenzo Ball, I believe, is the oldest. He's a freshman right now at UCLA. He's got two younger brothers, one of which is, I believe, a sophomore who's a point guard, and then the other one is a senior who just scored 72 points last week, 52 points in the game before that one. There's highlights on, dude, these guys are ridiculous. And I grew up around the Rush brothers, which, I mean, at the time really was just Jaron and, you know, Kareem. And if you're not familiar with Kareem, played for the Lakers around the NBA, I don't know, 8 or 10 years. Brandon Rush, the youngest brother, just was on the Warriors last year. I don't know. He may be out of the league at this point, but the oldest was arguably the best of, out of all three. Battled some demons, bounced around, didn't quite catch on in the NBA, unfortunately. But there's actually a couple really good documentaries about those guys. But similar thing here. The Ball brothers. I guess there's a cousin too or something. But they're just ridiculous. I mean, who's scoring 72 points And the thing is, the point guard brother is like the youngest. He's like the smallest now. I mean, he's 14, so I mean, who knows how big he'll be when he's done growing. But dude, they're doing the Steph Curry thing, and it dawned on me that you know, the shooting's getting so much better now than it used to be. 10, 15 years ago, it was horrible. You know, but now kids are growing up practicing shooting from half court, so it just, they're making them. Like, I mean, I've also just watched the highlights. I'm sure there was some misses in there too, but the fluidity that a 14-year-old kid that weighs 150 pounds pulls up from 40 feet away off the dribble and just nails a three, you're like, okay, I don't know if I've ever seen that one before. So that's, what is it, Chino Hills, I think, down here in L.A. But, all right, so now we'll officially start. Like I said, the Ricky Henderson episode. Look, you can argue that Ricky Henderson is one of the greatest baseball players of all time, strictly because he's the all-time leader in runs. I think it was 1,289, something like that, right above Ty Cobb, right above, wait, I got it, yeah, 1,295, but right above Ty Cobb, right above Barry Bonds, number one in steals. I mean, over 3,000 hits. The guy's a legend. But if you're not familiar with Ricky off the field, Ricky Henderson was known to have done just pretty much not whatever he wanted to, but he just Ricky saw life differently than a lot of people, did a lot of things differently than a lot of people did. But I found this great. This was him. This, I think this is the Mike and Mike show on ESPN. But this, the clip is so old. This had to have been, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, maybe. One of the first couple of years they're doing the show. But you got Ricky Henderson.
Right now,
on there.
I have here in my hand a story called "The 25 Best Stories of Ricky Being Ricky."
Uh-uh.
So you can tell us how many of these are true or not. Is it true that you once called San Diego General Manager Kevin Towers and left the following message? This is Ricky calling on behalf of Ricky. Ricky wants to play baseball.
False.
That's false?
No.
That didn't really happen?
No. All right, not like that.
How about this one? It is known that superstar athletes, when they check into their hotel, sometimes if they don't want to be found there or by the media or whoever, they'll use a different name. Did you ever check in under Richard Pryor?
Yes.
You did. Did you use other names?
Yes.
You did. What are some of the other names?
You know, Jane Brown. Luther Vanswell, you know, a lot of different names.
Now, when you're at the check of the counter there, and you say, you know, Richard Pryor or Luther Vandross, what do they say?
But they usually have a list.
You know,
they
okay.
Have a list on it, so the list is have our name on it. So we go. They give us the keys under our name.
Oh, okay.
So your name would be Luther Vandross.
Yes.
Okay, that fine. Works
sure.
For me.
Okay.
Is this a true story? In the early 1980s, the Oakland A's accounting department was freaking out because their books were off by $1 million. After an investigation, they realized the GM had given you a $1 million bonus check, and instead of cashing it, you framed it and hung it on the wall in your house.
That's true.
That's true.
Yeah.
You framed it.
You know?
I mean, how great is that? That's
okay.
I wish I had $1 million check.
Is it true that you once fell asleep on an ice pack, got frostbite, and missed 3 games?
In the middle of August.
Yes, that's with Toronto.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You missed 3 games with frostbite in August.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What were you icing at the time?
I was icing my ankle.
Your ankle. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right.
Is it true that you once asked a teammate how long it would take to drive to the Dominican Republic?
No.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Okay.
Is it true that the morning after the Red Sox finished off their 2004 World Series sweep against St. Louis, you called someone in the organization looking for tickets to Game 6?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. He had to think about it. He was thinking.
Can we go back to the check one? Why? Why did you frame the $1 million check and not cash that thing?
At that time, you know.
You had enough money?
No, I can't say I had enough money, but it was based upon, you know, when you're a kid and you want to be a millionaire. And time I got a signing bonus for $1 million, mm-hmm. I go, wow, I'm a millionaire, so I'm going to frame this here check. And put it on my wall, and I became a millionaire. And
In actuality, without putting the check in the bank, I think one could argue we're not yet a millionaire, though, right?
I wasn't a millionaire.
Right.
I wouldn't even get no interest.
Right. That's exactly right. So the question is, whatever happened to the check?
Yeah.
The Oakland A's finally called me when they was doing their book in December and asked me about where was the check. and I said it was on my wall. They said, "Can you take it down, go cash, and then put a duplicate in the frame
on the wall?" Yeah, yeah.
So you know, I eventually took the check down and went and cashed it.
Okay,
well, it's just phenomenal.
That's a great story.
That is a great story. And so, if you didn't know, that is a great story. Look, can you hear me? There you go. All right. So if you didn't know, that's Ricky. That's what made Ricky Henderson beloved by everyone. It's because he's just like, yeah, you know what, whatever. And he, apparently he was an All-American running back in high school. Just kind of like an all-around, you know, kind of a badass, if you will. So that's why I chose number 24. I could have gone with, oh, what is this we have? Who do we have here? That's right, Eric calling in. Oh, Eric, can you hear me there?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I have headphones in. Is that think it's good?
Oh, yeah.
How's it sound to you?
I'm good. Well, I was just telling the listeners about this episode number 24, the Ricky Henderson, and I just got done playing a clip of him on the Mike and Mike show where they were trying to debunk Ricky Henderson stories. It was the one about the million-dollar frame check, which was true. There was one about him asking for Game 6 tickets for the World Series after the Red Sox had swept the Cardinals. That was not a true story, but hey, welcome back, Eric. As you listeners know, Eric has been absent the past couple episodes because Eric has been traveling the past couple episodes. Eric, you mind filling the listener in as to where you've been around this great country of ours?
Sure. I went to the great city of Atlanta, to Denver, to New York City, as we went on Roast Battle, Road to Roast Battle 2, which you'll be able to see that starting January 1 on Comedy Central. I think we might start with Denver, but all good shows. It was also a weird time because we were actually traveling around during the election, so it's sort of like Atlanta and New York were those episodes were taped before the election of Trump. And we actually flew to Denver on election day and did the Denver show the very first day, like the day after the election, and then the LA show was about a week later. So that's an interesting experience to sort of see it and see it in hindsight, and, you know.
And for your listeners at home, it does. Trust me, as a comedian, like, audience will, like, you will do a joke and then something will happen socially, maybe, you know, it's like the Trayvon Martin thing. And all of a sudden, like, if you do a joke that even, like, remotely kind of touches any sort of topic that pertains to that, then, like, bye-bye laughter, you know, it's not...
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, the nice thing was I think the one benefit Roast Battle has amongst many comedy shows is that, you know, all right, so it's the night, I mean, we're in Denver the night... You know, the first 24 hours that we know Trump is going to be the president-elect. That's what, you know, these, and so we're basically, if you will, you know, it was like the election results were coming in. Like, I performed the night before, and the decision isn't, it's not final yet. It's just numbers are rolling in. So this is going to be the first night, the first show. And I think Roast Battle really benefited from the fact that, you know, it was like the two comics are battling each other. So a good deal of the comedy in some ways is, it's not political, or it doesn't necessarily have to do, you know, lots of jokes, a lot of good Roast Battle jokes do have to do with current affairs. But in this way, you know, I think, like, if for example, the Comedy Store has 15, 16 comics a night. I think, a show like that sometimes, like, Even the best comics, they could have gotten a little thrown and gone into... You could have the audience going to just, all right, well, Dave Chappelle or Chris Rock or Louis C.K. is just going to go into a riff or a ramble about Trump.
Right,
and,
right,
you know,
right,
the show could get a little off track. But the Roast Battle show was people really were coming out. They really wanted to laugh. And you know, the show was not in any way derailed by who was...
That's
who
good.
Or who was president.
Well, and listeners, too, if you haven't checked out the Roast Battle, Eric spent a week up in Montreal last year. Well, you know, in New York and Austin, Texas, went all over the country filming the show. And so what they do is they pair up comedians head to head where they just pretty much just shit on each other. And it's beyond your mama's fat. It's more like your grandpa has cancer and is going to die in 3 days is probably...
Now, on one hand, I don't want to ruin anything, and I'm not really allowed to spoil anything, but there's one comic in the L.A. show. I don't know how much we'll see of the... you don't know what the final cuts are going to be, but in the actual episode that we shot, there's a very funny comedian named Robin Tran. And she was a male who is transitioning to female. So, she's transgender.
Just a walking pun. Funny. Just one big walking pun.
Well, it's definitely something. It's loaded in roast battle terms. It's like some of us had even performed with her when she was Robert Tran, and a he. So there's lots. Obviously, that person is set up in a target-rich environment if you're going to in a roast battle situation. But what's really interesting is that so this now was 1 week. It was exactly a week after the election, and honestly, because of Trump being elected and everything that she fears is going to happen to transgender rights and the rights of gay people and lesbians and all that in general.
Right.
You could really see that she was, the wind was out of her sails just as a person. She was down, it would be nice to see her maybe fight a battle another day.
Man.
Unfortunately, the events of the election definitely had affected her. Not to tell you how, because that has nothing to do with how the battle actually ran, but you could see it definitely affected. It affected some of her performance.
And you know what's really messed up right now about America is there's probably somebody, and they don't even have to be in the backwoods. Like, there's someone right now that would hear that and be like, hell yeah, like happy. Be like, yeah, that's right. You don't deserve rights. And that's what I said to people. Look, depending on everyone voted for whoever for different reasons, but if you see someone. And we all know the certain Trump supporter that's very loud and like, but for the wrong reasons, like, whether it's like, just talk to them and say, look, buddy, like this, what you're saying right here is horrible. This is why. And if you think like that, just, maybe read outside the box a little bit. Look at, surf the internet more than just the 2 or 3 pages a day that you're going to. Maybe go overseas, read some news over there, just expand your mind a little bit. But so what I'm saying is use this as an opportunity to educate those horrible Trump supporters, that are just that are more borderline racism, racist and ignorance is more of what it is. It's just lack of exposure to different cultures. And if you don't know anyone that looks like that, you can't relate to anyone that looks like that, unfortunately, for a lot of people. So what I'm saying is for you good people out there, just use this as an opportunity to talk to people and maybe fucking reason with them and level with them a little bit. Anyway, sorry about that little...
I'm exactly the opposite. I don't think you can talk to those people. I don't think there's anything to say to those people. By the way, I think it's noble and I love what you just said, Caesar. Personally, I just think that... for the most part, I have listened to many people who voted for Trump and many reasons. It's like I consider my job over the next 4 years is to make people feel absolutely awful about the horrible things they voted for. To be quite honest, I think you voted wrong, and I'm not afraid to tell you you voted wrong, and I'm going to make you feel terrible until you vote better or kill yourself or get out of this country. I'm going to drive people up. I'm going to be a bully for the left. I'm tired. Bully's never going to stop. We have a bully in the White House, so there's no point to... There's no point in trying to get along or give the guy a chance. It's like, no, let's just bully up. Back in the 2004, the Red Sox had the cowboy up, and I'm saying let's bully up. It's a bully pulpit. It's a bully at the pulpit.
And you can find that at, what is it? Is it Hollywood Jesus or what's the Facebook page that's prime?
Jesus America did perform last night before the roast battle. And we got a bunch of people to boo a guy wearing a Trump T-shirt, and Jesus America threw a lot of weed candy into the crowd, and that's just it's step one for Jesus America 2020. No. You can find Jesus America 2020, and the ride begins now.
Now, would you say you paid off the audience then with the weed candies as Jesus America?
I'm not afraid. I think, it's like I feel Jesus America has already done more for his audience than Donald Trump will do for America, just by giving out a couple weed candies.
Well, you know, if you hand out Band-Aids.
Well, we're not on politics. Let's get
that's
off,
true.
Let's get
that's
off
true.
Politics.
Okay,
let's
okay, okay, okay. Real quick, before
the
we
other go- thing I did is I flew into Tampa. I flew into Florida. I flew into Florida to see my dad for Dad Quest 2, which was before Thanksgiving, and then drove up to see my brother in Cleveland. And then back to New Hampshire, home turf, you know, home of the New England Patriots, the once the future champions. And it's a lot of interesting things. Just on the sports tip, I'll for example, in Tampa, just driving in from the airport to where my dad is, you know, I saw a big Buccaneer, the Buccaneers, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, have a big billboard, and their campaign was Siege the Day. Like, instead of the Carpe Diem, Seize the Day, they went with Siege the Day, and I feel just how bad that that billboard is and that slogan is. It's kind of emblematic of just how bad the Buccaneers
I don't,
are.
Yeah, and I just don't feel like a lot of people. I don't feel like a lot of people would get that in their market. I don't think, you know what I mean. I feel right. like that's nope. over their heads. And then oddly enough, Eric, I as well was in Florida and Ohio recently. How weird is that? Right. I was in
right.
I dropped down to Disney World, which is an amazing, yep. as an adult. I'll tell you what, the best week to go to Disney World, the first week of December, Tuesday. The first Tuesday of December is the best time sure. to go to Disney World. 40-minute tops wait. And then we got the express pass, so we booked our reservations sure. at three different rides. Magic Mountain, still the reigning champion. I put this very 2001 Space Odyssey-esque type video of myself. Riding the ride and just losing it. I mean, just laughing uncontrolled.
You're saying Space Mountain, not Magic Mountain. Yeah, Magic Mountain is the park out here.
Space Mountain, yes. Space Mountain, Space Mountain. Correct. Thank you for that correction. But just had a great time. And then we were in Lakeland, Florida, so caught their an awesome Mardi Gras style Christmas parade that was awesome. And then on top of that, the morning, so we're checking out, flying to Cincinnati. So it's like 5:30 in the morning. We get in the hotel, and this, at first glance, it looked like a 50-year-old dressed in a full samurai, like, a robe with a bow, with, sure. like, with a black belt, and then a full samurai sword. And my first instinct was just to, like, if he pulls out the sword, I'm just going to grab his wrists. Like, that's where I'm going. I'm going for his... And he looked a little bit off. So then we get down, and it's continental breakfast time, and we look around, like, everyone's, like, got some sort of sword shirt on, or, like, and everyone looks, you know, it's like there's a lot of sword enthusiasts. Well, as it turns out, in the hotel we're staying at is hosting the 30th anniversary of Highlander, the Quickening Convention. And so,
really?
Yeah, for the television show and the movie. And so,
wow, of course.
We're heading to the airport, and I get a notification. We're about 30 minutes away that our flight's been delayed. And so I looked at my wife, and I was like, do you want to turn around and go to the Highlander convention? And I feel like this is, I mean, it's only the 30th anniversary. And I'm not even a huge Highlander fan, but,
right.
you know, it's Highlander. You got to, and it
well,
just.
Well, the one thing about any Highlander convention is I doubt, it makes me question all Highlander fans. When they gather together like that, because in the end they know there can be only one. So I don't understand what they're all doing gathering together.
I think they're all
they're gonna kill each other with swords. It's the Quickening.
They're all out Highlanding. But anyway, we decided against that. And at the same time, 2 hours after our game was they had the ACC championship, which was now in Orlando because of the North Carolina bathroom thing.
All right.
Which was Virginia Tech and Clemson, and there was a big story about how no one's traveling to the game because, you know, if Clemson wins, they want to save their money for the national championship and this and all this.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so there were tickets online, StubHub, for $10, I believe, sorry, $18. I'm getting that mixed up because when in Cincinnati, almost went to the Bengals game last Sunday, but just got there in the fourth quarter. You just can't go into an NFL game in the fourth quarter for some reason.
Oh.
Even with but when looking online to StubHub, not even kidding you, you can get a ticket right now for this weekend's Bengals Browns game in Cincinnati, $7.
Yeah.
$7 will get for the price of a meal at McDonald's, you can get into an NFL game. It's like that's how bad it's gotten right now. in Cleveland.
Well, that is, I mean, they're a troubled team. I did drive right as we drove to Cleveland. We drove right. You have to drive right past the Great American Ballpark of the Reds and the Bengals Field, right by the right off the highway, right there by the river. And of course, that brought me to Cleveland, Ohio, Sheezer. Where
wait, so you drove all the way? You drove all the way across the state?
We did too. What we did is, well, we were coming from Tampa, and so we drove up. We drove up to that area in Tennessee near where the wildfires were.
Oh, okay.
I actually got to meet four very nice firefighters from Oregon who had volunteered with about 100 other guys from Oregon to fight these Tennessee wildfires. And we drove through the Smoky Mountains, played some Rocky Top as we went through Rocky Top.
Great song. Great song.
But it truly was. These Smoky Mountains were definitely a little bit more smoky, and they definitely came with, it wasn't just the optical illusion of the fog that made them look smoky, the cloud layer. It was definitely some, there was definitely some wood burning, some barbecue.
Sorry about that, we got cut off there. So, you're in the Smoky Mountains, there's actual smoke everywhere in the Smoky Mountains. You just met some good people, some good firefighters from Oregon. You're making your way towards Ohio.
Absolutely, and then, which is interesting because, you know, Cleveland is a very interesting city at a very interesting time where you're saying they've just won an NBA title. They've just lost a World Series. 12 at their NFL, with their NFL season. And I don't know if you know this, breaking news, Sheezer, Robert Griffin III supposedly is supposed to start this Sunday for the Browns. You know, having not played since week one and, you know, going out of bounds and, like, breaking a bone in the shoulder.
Which he does, he's known to do.
So it's a very interesting, Cleveland is a very interesting town at a very interesting time. It's a lot prettier than you think. Went to the symphony, lovely symphony, heard that Beethoven's Fifth, and went to their, they have a lovely museum section.
Culture.
Right, it's all around, they have a very lovely section around the Case Western University. That is a very, very, very nice area. My brother and his lovely wife are professors at Cleveland State, the Vikings, who sometimes make a big dance appearance every couple of years. So that was it's very lovely, and like I said, it's interesting to see the ups and downs of Cleveland, being that they have won their first title since Jim Brown. They have lost the World Series yet again and now are the losingest. You know, they are now the new Cubs or the new Red Sox with the longest World Series drought of anyone in Major League Baseball who has actually won before. And now you have the Browns, which is always, you know, I often say it's, you know, the Browns are a lot like the Stephen King novel and movie Pet Sematary in that, you know, the original Browns got up and left and went to Baltimore, became the Ravens, won two Super Bowls. But then, you know, the NFL did the one thing they'd never done for anything else. They actually reconstituted the Browns. But that's almost like burying your son in the pet cemetery, and the kid comes back to life. And it's just not right.
It's kind of creepy. Right. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, and the Cleveland Browns 2.0, the zombie Browns, they're just not right. It's not good in any way. It's a terrible, terrible division, terrible time. And it's a weird thing to see because – the other thing, of course, being said is Cleveland is a Browns – look, certain cities are certain – it's like it doesn't matter what you say about Boston. It is the Red Sox city absolutely first. Even with the Celtics, even with the Belichick and Brady, Boston is Red Sox first.
There's diehard Bruins fans too. Don't forget them.
No, absolutely. I mean, you're saying you have four, and you know, but they are it's Red Sox first. It just is. And Cleveland is that way for the Cleveland Browns. For example, you know, it's like, granted, you have bars that have, they literally have fathead LeBron life-size stickers on the wall of LeBron James. But you know what they also have? They have flags in that bar with a Browns helmet that says, it's always football season. And it always is football season in Cleveland. Even though it doesn't matter whether it's spring or fall, they can't seem to win a game.
I mean, at some point, it reminds me of my old Nintendo. Like when the cartridge would stop working, you would jam it in and you'd press it down and you'd press reset real fast. Or maybe you'd hold it down and let it go.
Sure.
And at this point, it feels like that franchise has pressed that reset button so many times that they just, I mean, I don't, is, there's nothing, I mean, what can they do? I guess just wait and wait and wait.
Maybe what, I'll tell you this, what Hugh Jackson might need to do is pick each one of his starting quarterbacks up by the cleats and blow on the bottom of their cleats like you do on an old cartridge, you know, when you had to blow it out, and then you jam it back in and restart it, because sometimes there's a little bit of dust, and so you got to put the cartridge back in. And maybe, and by the way, maybe this RG3 start, maybe that's the blowing on the cartridge. Maybe there is a chance. And hope springs eternal in Cleveland. And I will say this, if RG3 could win this game, you would actually maybe see the happiest 1-12 fan base you have ever seen in your life. There might literally be joy in the streets of Mudville.
I mean, you must be quick to forget Johnny Morton, I believe, in 2004 after the Giants or the Lions finally won a game after they were 0-13 or something. And he ran up to the camera and immediately started talking trash on Jay Leno and everyone that was making fun of the Lions. He acted like they had just won the Super Bowl, really. And it was just like, yeah, we proved you guys all wrong. And we're like, all right, listen, guys, you're a professional football team. You won a game. Just calm down, Johnny Morton. Calm down.
Well, because here's the terrible thing is the Cleveland Browns aren't just a team that haven't won this year. They haven't won since Johnny Manziel last was a starter. The last starting quarterback to win a game was Johnny Manziel. And he's been out of the league all, you know, for a year. Like, this time last year, he was getting benched and was losing his job and was well on his way. Like, you know, that was, I think this time last year, right around December, this was when he was showing up in Vegas with mustaches and all that kind
of
crazy.
Yeah, all that weird, yeah, and cocaine,
and
allegedly.
And they haven't won since. And so what I'm saying is they went through, like, six starting quarterbacks in their first six games, and, you know, they don't have a sense, they don't have a sense of hope. I mean, everyone's thinking they're going to get the number one draft pick because they're very likely to go 0-16.
Well,
but it's even one of those, but like, do you draft another quarterback? I'm like,
yes, they're going to.
And someone's going to say that they're going to, and they're wrong to. They've been wrong. The Cleveland Browns should have stuck with guys like Brian Hoyer, who was a game manager, and it's not sexy, but
just
you end up
build,
pushing out
build something.
Because of, like, right, you build. You need to build a car with the struts and the wheels and the suspension and everything's balanced before you drop in some Ferrari engine. It's like, look at
the Browns are single-handedly inflating those ratios, the odds of making it into the NFL. Like, they're employing so many quarterbacks that it makes it like they're inflating the odds, you know, because in all reality, they're employing, you know, an extra 5-6 guys to every one quarterback that every other NFL team has. So it makes it, it's harder to make the NFL as a quarterback than it actually looks like, just because the Browns, well, unless you go play for the Browns.
And I think what a lot of people overlook very quickly is, you know, high draft picks. For you know, it's like it's in our blood that we think a high draft pick is a sure thing and a good thing, and that's the way you can get out of the doldrums. But the real fact is, if you stay down in the low, if you get high draft picks, that costs you more money on your cap, and then you need each one of these guys to be successful. Even at whatever, you know, Johnny Manziel was drafted at 22nd, so he didn't get like top 15 money. But even that was paying too much. And it's like, if you go, it's like they don't need to put another quarterback. It's like, what do you want? Do you want next year's Jared Goff? Even
you
Carson
just, you need
Lynch,
a
like,
line.
Sure.
You just start with an offensive line. Because then if you have a solid offensive line, an average running back becomes good. And when you have an average running back that's now good, at least in the eyes of the defense, now all of a sudden your average wide receivers become a little bit better because they're open a little bit more often. So if you have a Brian Hoyer as a quarterback, guess what? He's going to look a little bit better. It's like, it's so
simple. You need to actually
simple.
Build cornerstones. You need to take that number one pick or that number two pick, if God forbid they should actually win two games and somehow the 49ers get the first pick. It's like, you need to get that cornerstone guy. That guy that is like, you know, he played for Warren Sapp, like a Warren Sapp, you know, a guy who, and he dropped because of marijuana back in the day. But these are guys that, you know, I put this guy in as a defensive tackle, I'm locked down. I got this guy as a right tackle, I have this locked down.
For seven years.
These guys have to be absolutely phenomenal difference-maker players that if I put that guy, if he's a strong safety, a cornerback, a linebacker, a run, it's like he absolutely has to make it. It has to work. And it doesn't have to be sexy because you keep the Cleveland Browns keep trying to be something they're not. And they're not anything. Yep. I mean, you're saying they started when they started with Tim Couch, and they keep it's like you just keep trying to fill a hole that in some ways doesn't fill, you know.
Yeah, and now
there was one game that they were so hurt that Terrell Pryor, who was a quarterback and you know shifted over to wide receiver, was like playing snaps before they went to Whithurst. I mean, when the Patriots were playing the Browns in October or whatever it was, and that was like game five or game six, and this is when the Browns had lost yet another quarterback or two during the game, and Terrell Pryor actually went in before the second stringer. Because they were trying to do something sneaky, and that was in some ways that was valuable. It's like, man, Terrell Pryor, I'll go with that.
Yeah, I mean, start with him. You know, maybe start having invent a new offense where Terrell Pryor's throwing five balls a game as a wide receiver or something. You know,
let's just do everything out of the Wildcat for a couple games and do something else because if your defense isn't going to stop anybody, I don't know if I care. It's like you're trying to win clearly. You've never had a good – the entire new Browns have never had anyone work out at quarterback, so why on earth would I ever expect it to be different? And then, to remember in some ways, think about it. Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana, and certainly Tom Brady are the winningest Super Bowl-era quarterback. You know, I mean, in the Super Bowl, they've all won four. And in all sense of them, no one really, like, only, and then John Elway, who's gone to 5-1-2, lost three. Of all those, he was the guy that was the stud. You know what I mean? Like, and let's go to Peyton Manning.
Yeah,
Peyton Manning and the Browns.
And by stud, do you mean, like,
Ryan Leaf didn't work out.
Right, okay, I see what you
like
mean.
Number one.
Like, the huge, the 6'5", the 6'6", 200 and whatever pound. You know, the big stud quarterback.
But it's just like this guy that they say is your, you know, a Peyton Manning, a John Elway, an overall consensus number one pick. But is that Jared Goff now? Because there's a point where Tom Brady, so I'm watching Tom Brady win this past week against the LA Rams for Tom Brady now.
Not even a game. I wouldn't even classify that as an actual.
But Tom Brady now gets his 201st win, which takes him over Peyton Manning's 200. And
really?
And the announcers doing what they do, they're like, well, you know, Peyton Manning didn't have some of the team that Tom Brady did.
Really?
Well, you know, but here's an interesting point about that. Remember that Peyton Manning decided for 3, 4, 5 seasons in a row, it was important to him to be the most highest paid player / most highest paid quarterback or in the top 2 or 3. And so it's like, whereas Tom Brady, it's like in New England, a sign of spring is the snow melts and Tom Brady renegotiates his contract with the Patriots.
To fit in.
That's
right,
a sign
right,
of
right,
spring.
Right.
Because the man, it's like, if you're going to say, well, player X didn't play on the same kind of team than player Y did, but you also have to ask, why did player Y, in this case Tom Brady, get these teams? Because Tom Brady put team, and I'm gonna leave money on the table. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to be the highest paid player. It's like, look, Andrew Luck is going backwards or treading water.
Yeah, he's just average now. Right, right.
But because in some ways he's taking up too much of the cap. We don't have him. It's like that guy needs to realize, hey man, don't be the highest paid quarterback.
Or maybe even better, maybe the league's not about having the highest paid quarterback and distributing the money, you know, balancing it out on deep. I mean, that's why I'm excited as a Chiefs fan. I'm legitimately excited about our chances this year just because the defense is so good. It's something I haven't seen in 20 years since I was a kid. and it's exciting to think, like, wow, every play there could be a turnover.
How exciting was your fake? I mean, you had a fake punt that you ran right up against the Atlanta Falcons, and you evidently won the game because of
a pick
going
two.
They won the game.
No, well, in the week before that, the Broncos game was probably the most exciting Chiefs game I've maybe ever watched, and that was, you know, overtime, last-second field goal after Denver tries a 63-yard field goal that they miss, and then we come back, shank one that goes into the uprights. I mean, it's a crazy season. I don't think Denver really has enough to get through it, but we'll go into all that stuff.
Well, now you have the Raiders. You have a big Thursday night game coming up.
Yep, we'll see.
You know, and that is going to be the Raiders are in first place, but they also have to face every one of their division, you know, everyone in the AFC West, and they have to face each one of you in your home. They have to go to Kansas City, go to San Diego, and go to Denver.
It'll be the first real test for Carr, and unfortunately, I think he's up to the task. I mean, I really like what that guy does, and they've got a good running back with Murray if he's healthy. He's kind of like a bruiser style. He's a little bit leaner, maybe quicker than.
But in some ways, you have to say that it's like Derek Carr isn't doing it on his own. It's like the Mike Crabtree is a good enough player.
Right, absolutely.
He was a big premier wide receiver for a Niners team that went to a Super Bowl. And then he sort of, you know, it's like in some ways you could say that, you know, the shine fell off Michael Crabtree, some of his production. Some people thought, you know, it's like he certainly, to the public narrative, he plays as a guy that sort of said more than he could actually do, or, you know, it's like he can't necessarily cash
on
the text
he seemed to be writing. He's one of the rare guys, too, that by the time he came out of college as a wide receiver, everyone already knew who he was just because he had shattered all those records at Texas Tech, and he had had that game-winning touchdown against Texas where he broke two tackles. And so he already had kind of like a high-level, almost Heisman-winning, you know, season.
Right.
And so really at that point, it was hard to maintain that level in the NFL. It's hard to shine. But he's had a pretty decent career. I don't even know what year. He's probably – I wouldn't be – what is he in his, like, ninth year already or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah.
But he also seems like he's been around for 15.
Yeah.
There's a point
right,
where –
exactly.
And the NFL – the league is such that in some ways we were all ready to say, oh, Michael Crabtree, he's all washed up. And fortunately, you know, the Raiders offense and the Raiders defense is gelling and coming together. You know, they're building a program. I mean, that's something that – you know, it's been 15 years since they won 10 games, and they're in it, you know. And you guys, the Chiefs, they're in it. The Browns are still waiting to see who their starting quarterback is, and do you keep Hugh Jackson if a coach wins? You know, if you brought in a new coach and he wins no games, are you building towards the future? You know, do you take that? It's like, remember, the Dallas Cowboys went 1-15 with Jimmy Johnson, and, you know, they had I think they drafted Aikman and Emmett or whatever they had, you know, and like sometimes they took that 1-15 and they swallowed it and they built towards three Super Bowls later. But is that what you have with Hugh Jackson? I don't know.
Nowhere close.
And then I will also say this to everybody, in lieu of Tom Brady and, you know, lots of people like to have all time and who's the best quarterback of all time. Let me just say this. Guys, I don't know who your all-time greatest quarterback is, but if it's anybody aside from Tom Brady, like, I understand you say Joe Montana, you say Peyton Manning, you could say Dan Marino, John Elway.
Right, right, right.
In some ways, these are all valid answers, but I will say to you this. Tom Brady, 201 wins, 4 Super Bowl rings, 6 Super Bowl appearances, 10 AFC Championship game appearances. He's married to Giselle Bundchen, and most important fact of all, # still playing. And when I say that, I remind you that John Elway, Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, all of them, the one thing they're all envious of is still playing.
That's
the man
right.
Has 4 rings. He's been to 6 Super Bowls, and he could be going to 7 and trying to get 5, if you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Hey, with that being said, let's go to break real quick. We'll be right back after this.
Thank you. Same stuff.
I've had years of cramped up city life, friend. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee, Rocky Top, Tennessee.
All right, and we Rocky are Top, back. That's, so, of course, that's the Osborne Brothers with Rocky Top. If you don't know that, they are, you know, I guess, what is that, Hee Haw? Was that, that was that show, right? Hee Haw?
Oh, I don't know, but I mean, that could have been where you recorded it from. That is certainly, that is a classic. If you guys go on YouTube, Osborne Brothers, just say Rocky Top, and about 8 of the 12 will be Osborne Brothers or Osborne Brothers with someone playing their song Rocky Top. And so it's, and when driving through the Smoky Mountains and Rocky Top, it's just fun to do. I also drove through in Florida. We drove over the Suwannee River, you know, of the Suwannee River.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
So sometimes, you know, it's like, guys, when you drive around the country, don't be afraid to check out the local music. This song was written here. This song was written there. But that aside, we're all home now. And Cheeser, it was a surprise to not see you at the baseball winter meetings this year. You're usually right in the lobby of the hotel.
Well, that's when they are conveniently located a few blocks down the street from my apartment, which, you know, maybe at some point if they return to L.A., maybe crash them again, try to. But, no, it's been, a lot's going on. I mean, as of today, the waiter, check please, Wade Davis, Chicago fans. That's what happens when Wade Davis now closes the game. For you Cubs fans, it's waiter, check please, because the game is over. Everyone's ready to go, so they want to pay up. So you can go ahead and have that. I'm also offering my I'm Not Wade Davis shirt to any Cubs fans that want it. Only qualification, you have to be white and you have to have a red beard. You have to actually somewhat resemble Wade Davis. That's the only qualification.
You know, geez, I got to say, we gotta get a couple Cubs fans on here to talk about this. And how, it's like, you know, it's like you're at that orgasmic high of having finally won a World Series, and now you're in that, you know, the afterglow. But you start to see, it's like, you know, now the thing with the team that you love and the team that just won has to start making changes. For example, you know, the 04 lovable dirt dog Red Sox were soon in some ways broken up with Johnny Damon going to, to play for the Yankees. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
you know,
there were
points where...
But he'd only been on.
Chapman, it's like the Cubs aren't going to re-sign Chapman, and Chapman, in many ways, was a hero of that series. He put a team, he put a town, he put a 108-year drought on his back, on his shoulders, and now you're not going to. It's like the guy could go to the Nationals, and that could be a big thing coming next season, or the Yankees, or wherever he goes.
Right, and that's I have another issue too. Like I feel that you shouldn't be allowed to go back to the Yankees. Like, it just seems like that they kind of cheated the system. You sign them, you get prospects,
yep.
You trade them mid-season, and then you can re-sign them again after just cashing in on those prospects. Like, that to me just seems, I mean, it's great. It's like, you know, it's like having a good, you know, tax guy, you know,
sure.
You're playing within the rules, but there's something about that just doesn't feel right.
Now, remember the fact that, you know, first of all, it's not a guarantee. It does feel that way. I know what you're saying. But there are times where I know my Red Sox traded John Lester thinking, oh, we can trade him to Oakland, and then we can sign him back. And, you know, John Lester ended up never coming back and is now part of the Chicago Cubs. So there's a point sometimes where it's like, you know, you could throw that boomerang, but there are, you know, there are 30 other teams out there that could intercept that boomerang. It's not guaranteed to come back to you.
No, you're right.
It also sent. I remember, you know, when the Yankees, you know, when their core four, when they were making that, you know, 96 to 2000 run, it just seemed like every year Louis Soho would be on another team like the Pirates, but somehow during the stretch run he would end up getting traded back to the Yankees and in the playoff lineup and making a difference, which always drove me a little bit insane.
Yeah, you're like, again? You're like, I thought he was just, or I mean, yeah. You know, like with Ricky Henderson, this being the Ricky Henderson episode, I think he ended up playing, you know, for like 12 different teams. He was a guy that every year was getting traded, it seemed like, you know, towards the end of the season at the deadline.
Yeah.
Which
He was the player he named.
I mean, I guess you can't cap it, but I mean, that's kind of shitty, right? I mean, I feel like if anyone should the Yankees shouldn't be able to benefit from that as well as having a ton of money. But good for Brian Cashman.
Well, it was, I have to tell you, one of the absolute joys of this offseason has been that Yankees GM Brian Cashman actually just referred to the Red Sox as the Golden State Warriors of baseball.
Dombrowski's amazing. Like, I mean, how do you get – I mean, Johan Moncada or whatever. He was the MVP of the Futures game that I was at down in San Diego this past summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously a great prospect, but it's a matter of – well, that's cool and all, but you know who else is an amazing prospect already for and proven is Chris Sale. And personally, he's that one – like, he'll be on the all-decade team, whatever. Like, he's a Randy Johnson light. He's a once in a never, you know, every 10 years kind of a pitcher. And I love it. I mean, you took him out of the AL Central. The Royals don't have to face this guy now 8-10 times a year. The White Sox, you know, I think
he's still a sock, is what you're saying. He goes from sock to sock. It feels good.
Great point. It's comfortable for him. I mean, maybe that was in his clause. He's like, I will only go to Cincinnati or Boston or Chicago. I will not go anywhere else. Which was interesting. In Cincinnati, I visited I think it's a Great America Ballpark, I think is what it's called, but visited the Johnny Bench statue outside, and it's right there downtown. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, you couldn't want – it's great location, and they had it's the first ever professional baseball team, which I had forgotten. I think founded in 1882. So, you know, a lot of history there, but I mean, look, at this point, Boston, I mean, you guys never, it's almost irritating at this point. You guys are just always good at everything, it seems like. Except for the NBA. You're always rebuilding. But as far as Patriots, Red Sox.
Granted, we put together, we did get away with one and, you know, competed for two with the big three of Garnett, Pierce, and Allen was fun and lucky. I think in some ways, to me, especially because these Isaiah Thomas Celtics, they kind of like, to me, they're the Celtic version of the Baby Bulls. You know, like the Baby Bulls, like since Jordan has retired for real from the Bulls, we've had two separate Bulls teams, or, you know, eras of teams, if you will, that were referred to basically as the Baby Bulls. As these young Bulls will grow up to be a contender Jordan Bulls.
Initially,
we've gone through it twice.
Well, that was mainly because Tyson Chandler and Eddie Curry were taken, like, I think 1 and 2 or 1 and 3, both to the Bulls as like these big men, you know, that obviously Eddie Curry didn't quite have the careers, Shaq Jr. or whatever his nickname was. But so I think it was just more of a, you know, it was more branding. But yeah, now they're in the Fred Hoiberg era, which, you know, everyone's older now, and God bless Dwayne Wade, but God, I think he's, you know, he's been in the league since, what, 03? So this is his 13th, 14th year. So if you're in an NBA, if you want to see Dwayne Wade, like, actually play somewhat like Dwayne Wade, go see him this year, because it's probably not going to last too much longer.
Well, I feel in some ways that what I'm saying is it's like, but it's always, like you're saying, it's always rebuilding, and do you have, it's like, I don't necessarily... It's like there are lots of feel-good, we're growing something of it with Brad Stevens, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart. We like the scrappy. They're good for a playoff, you know, second round. do they have a difference maker? It's like it seems like some of the big, you know, it's like too many good players are stuck on the Pelicans or the they're just stuck in odd places.
Well, that's part of it, too. It's like the league's going through this kind of like big man renaissance right now, and unfortunately, I think – what is it? The big white guy, was his name Kelly or something? Or the big white guy from Gonzaga. You know, I think he's like your biggest low post presence. I don't think that's gonna quite get it done for you guys.
No, it's like when we had Eric Montrose. You thought you liked it in college terms. You liked it, but not actually in the pros.
Yeah, didn't translate. You know? Didn't translate that well. Mm-hmm. Like Big Country Reeves, and actually Ostertag had a pretty sweet NBA career. He lasted a lot longer than I thought he would. How he stayed healthy, I don't know.
But wasn't Ostertag ended up on the Jazz for some long period of time?
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Well, because he's in Ostertag's is in the middle of every single picture from the '96 NBA Finals Bulls Jazz. So he's either getting dunked on or grabbing some sort of awkward rebound or, yeah. So that's, I mean, that was really the peak of Ostertag's fame was that year's playoffs, just because, you know.
Ostertag.
Yeah, poster tag. Though I'll give him credit. I remember this would have been, I think, like 92, 93. He once dribbled the ball from midcourt, did a little behind-the-back thing at Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence and dunked the ball, which, you know, brought down the rafters. Everyone was like, oh, my God. He can dribble the ball. No one had ever seen it before. It was amazing. And I witnessed it. It did happen.
You know, I think there's also a point where, you know, hey, basketball doesn't, you know, the one and dones, we've now had, you know, we have been dealing with one and dones for at least 13 years, 16, you know, LeBron, like you're saying, LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo all came out in 03. That was all the 03 season, 03 draft. And, you know, so we've been, so in a long time, and I feel like that's now almost a full generation of decimation of really playing, knowing what you got when a kid came out of college versus we now have to, you're drafting guys as three-year projects. Porzingis.
Yeah, you know what you're getting. You know what you're going to get more often than not. It's not like a lottery. There's less projection, and you're not relying on people who just watch this guy play.
No, way back then there was, but now you don't know what you have. You just don't know, and we play that game, and that's why you've also seen, like, look, the NBA had to put in a D-League. I think it's interesting that the NFL is sort of talking about basically some sort of minor league or D-League or, you know, spring football because – you know, they're starting to talk about how the difference between, you know, because of their collective bargaining agreement, coaches have less time with players to actually install stuff. And in some ways, that's where coverages, blocking schemes, a team like the Patriots, who's had consistently Bill Belichick and a stable out of 16 years, you know, they're going to be able to do more than Hugh Jackson and Adam Case. You know, these guys that are 1 year, 2 years in, they don't have time to put in their system.
Yeah, with the Patriots, it's kind of like if you can come in and you don't adapt to it, then they can just, all right, well, whoever adapts, then that's who stays. And, you know, and they have that kind of bar. Right. They have that kind of expectation. Whereas with the Browns, right, you can go in and be like, you know what, I'm going to go get drunk as hell tomorrow night after practice and then just go to practice tomorrow hungover.
The Patriots didn't have any problem getting rid of Jamie Collins. Everyone was saying Jamie Collins is this unbelievably talented linebacker. And now it's like he's gone and he's playing on the winless Browns. And, you know, we got a guy from the Lions and a guy from the Bears that weren't, Van Noy and the other guy. And they're just, now they're making plays and they're going to the playoffs. You know, and that's one of those things where the Patriots have that Patriot way where I don't need you to be a star. I don't need you. It's like I don't need if your salary cap is too big. I can't actually cut you if it's not working out. Whereas the Browns, they're trying to make this goes for Jacksonville or any one of these struggling franchises. Some of these guys are making decisions where they feel like, hey, I have to make this player work because of a salary cap number. This has to work out for us.
Yeah, they have more leverage. But
the Patriots have the luxury of success that they've worked for and said, hey, I can let this highly touted guy go. You know, it's like, look, I took Randy Moss when he was damaged and I let him go when it wasn't working out for me anymore. And Randy Moss still wants to play for me.
Yeah.
That's, you know.
Coach, I'll come back. All right. We'll let you know. But you're doing a great job announcing. He actually is a really good – I enjoy it when he's announcing. Like, he's just got that really good ex-player vibe, and you trust what he's saying because he's from West Virginia, so he has that country draw, so he's, like, extra believable. You know what I mean?
Rand University, you know?
Rand
University. No one keeps it as real.
Rand
U. Great cash, homie.
Oh, man.
Rand U, right.
Well, anything real quick before we call it a show this week? Anything to promote?
Hey, guys, you know, it's like if you're up in L.A., the show up, go up is the next two Sundays. We're going to have Christmas night is a Sunday. We won't be there. The comedy show will be dark on December 25th. But, you know, for the next two Sundays of December and then all, you know, and the first, whatever, three or four Sundays in January, we'll be at the show up, go up. You can check it out on Periscope, too. Find us at show up, go up L.A. on Twitter, on Facebook, all around it, all social media platforms. And then, you know, check out the Roast Battle coming in January.
That's right.
Tuesday night show off of viewable on Periscope. And that's what I got you.
Yeah, and that's every Tuesday night, also live when they're not around the country, every Tuesday night in the Belly Room at the Comedy
that's
Store.
Right.
Sponsors real quick, laughprince.com, LAUGHPRINTS, laughprince.com. Satirical, funny stuff, videos, all that kind of stuff, comedians, different shows to view, all that good stuff. And then Union Press KC, still got a great deal on shirts and hoodies if you need anything printed up for like your basketball team, for family reunions, for whatever. They can design stuff for you and get it taken care of. And I think that's it. Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. And Eric, you're going to start tweeting too, right?
Yes. That's my Christmas. That's what the Christmas wish. Everyone needs to come.
Right. All right. Well, with that being said, guys, stay obsessed.
Hey, here's this.
Oh, the whistle's back. Let me hear it one more time. Oh, that's great. That's perfect.